This is Memories Are Made of This, a project of the sub-freshman class at University High in Urbana. Many of our most profound memories come from our interactions with family. From the first breath we take, we depend on those around us to nurture and teach us. Always, there is connection and growth.
I'm John Orland.
My object is
a model boat. It's wooden. The hull is about 12 inches long, and the mast is about 12 inches tall. The mast is bamboo. The rigging is fish line. The deck is a slab of wood about 12 inches long and pointed at the end. The hull is shaped so it's more buoyant, and it's curved. It's pointed at one end and a little rounded at the other. The keel is about 4 inches long, cracked in the middle because we split it once. The keel goes about an inch deep. It's slanted to make it aerodynamic. It has two nails protruding from the bottom that we added for weight. On the bottom there's a piece of lead. On one of the nails, there's a piece of lead, and that was to add even more weight.
My dad, when he was little, he had these two sailboats that he had bought at a store, I think. And one of them was red and one of them was green, and we still have them today. So I kind of wanted to have a model boat of my own, and so this is my boat. We named it the Heron.
How'd you get that name?
Well, we named it after the heron that, well, like he stole all the fish out of my granddad's goldfish pond every morning. My grandfather has all these old tools and stuff. And they're really old, and like no one uses them anymore because we all have power tools. And so it was kind of a neat experience getting to know how to like work with the wood and having him help me make it. And it was really a fun bonding experience.
Did you have any problems like when you first sailed it or anything like that?
Yeah, when we first took it out, it tipped over because it didn't. Well, before we didn't have the nails in the bottom. I mentioned before that there's a keel, and then we had hammered nails in the bottom. But before we didn't have the nails in them, and so we put it in the water. A big gust of wind came by, and it blew right over, and so we had to let it sit out and dry. And I was very frustrated with it. So we took it back home, and we tried to hammer in some nails, and the first time it split, so we had to glue it back together again. And then we carefully put in the nails, and then we clamped on a piece of lead on the bottom. So it had a lot of weight, and next time it sailed really well.
Do you have any sort of problems while building it?
I have a lot of frustrations. I used to be really childish when I was about the age at which I built it, and I got frustrated with it, and this is what I'm not proud of, but I did get frustrated at one time, and I threw it out the door of the garage, and it was, and it didn't break, unfortunately, like, there was no damage somehow, but it just, I had some frustrations with building it, but, towards when we were concluding the building, I sort of realized that to be more patient and stuff, and to be more patient with the building process and everything. So it taught me a lot about patience and how good work pays off.
Could you describe your grandfather?
He's about, I'd say, 74, mid-70s. He's really nice. A lot shorter than me because he grew up in wartime. He grew up during the Depression, and people during the Depression were malnourished, and so you'll see a lot of people around his age these days that are just kind of short. And so him and my nanny are pretty short people. I've had so many good experiences with them. Because my granddad is just a great storyteller, and he has so many stories of, like, when him and my grandmother met, for instance, they went on their first date, and when he was, they went to a restaurant, and halfway through dinner, when they were just about to get dessert, I think it was, that he asked her, "Oh, sorry, what was your name again?" So that's not a really good dating thing to do. So, but they even have an article in the newspaper about them. A few years ago they had an article in the newspaper about that couple, and they're really nice people. But my granddad loves to tell wartime stories. He and Nanny used to work in a factory that built mines. And every night they could hear the bombing runs on Coventry, which is only a few miles away by the Germans. So that was pretty scary. And one day they went to work and their factory was a crater. So that was pretty bad. So they lost their job and they had to go to another factory and build mines there, I guess. But yeah, he has so many stories about when he was in wartime. Actually, he once was a guard for a bridge. It was a rail bridge, and they had to guard it against the spies maybe that would come by. And so, what was funny was they were given rifles by their superior officers. They were just volunteers, basically. But they weren't given any ammunition because their superior officers were afraid that because their low intelligence quotient, they would shoot each other accidentally. So they didn't give him any ammo. They just gave him guns to make him look threatening. He has a garden that he's obsessed with. We did that a lot. We also every time I go over there, we just build models in general. It's not anything big, but what he knows that I likes to build models. So whenever we go over there, we'll probably go to a model shop, and he lets me pick out a model, and he's a really nice guy. So he lets me pick out a model, and then we basically spend my free time on the whole rest of the trip building it. And then by the end of the trip, it's done, and I get to show it off to the rest of the people, to the rest of our family and my grandmother.
I'm really happy that I actually stuck through it and finished the boat, though, now, because it's really a nice memory.
My name is Zoe Ginsberg, and my objects are Afghani dresses made by my grandmother. The larger one is black with small orange flowers and green leaves. The smaller one is red with large pink flowers on it. It also has buttons on the shoulders that are broken, and there's a rip in the right side.
What does your grandmother look like?
She's small. She's about 5'2". She has curly dark hair. She's petite. She is quite athletic, and she is 53. When I was born, she was 40, and she didn't feel like she should be called grandmother. So she just made up a random name that she thought little kids could say, Noni, and it turned out to be grandmother in Italian.
Now, your grandmother made dresses. Were you involved in any of the dress making?
No, she made them when my mom was about 2 or 3. They lived in Afghanistan. My grandmother had a business, and she designed the dresses and hired other people to make them. She still makes clothes. Last year she made a ball gown but it didn't fit her, so she gave it to me.
So you don't help her, like, even now?
Sometimes I do. I sew clothes, too, and she helps me a lot when she's in town or when I'm with her.
Is she fun to be around?
Yeah, she's my favorite grandmother. She's really cool, and she sends me, like, clothes and presents, like, all the time. Her and my grandfather are pretty young, and they're, like, really funky. They're really cool.
What makes them cool?
Their actions are just, like, they seem a lot younger than they are because of what they do. My grandmother, last year, she ran a marathon, and that's not something that a lot of people can say about their grandparents.
How does your grandmother, like, impact you? What does she do that's so special about her?
She likes kids, and I remember, like, when I was little, I would go over to her house, and we'd do projects, and we'd make stuff, and I really liked that when I was little. And I think that because of the impact she had on me when I was little, I'm creative now, and I think that without that, I probably wouldn't be as creative as I am now.
Why do the dresses mean so much to you?
Having something concrete that I can remember about my grandmother helped me. I think that the dresses aren't necessarily important, but it's like what they symbolize. I hope to keep them and pass them on to my children.
My name is Chris Coombs, and my object is an old train set that once belonged to my grandfather. The engine is kind of a dark black gray kind of color with the wheels connected with a bronze plate. The caboose is a Lionel caboose. They're all rusty. This one's especially rusty. It's a dark red, and the wheels are orange.
Will you please tell us your train set's story?
Well, they once belonged to my biological grandfather, who left my dad's family when he was only 3 years old. He was in World War II, and when he came back, he felt very, very stressed about the war, and he decided to leave. And one of the things he left in my father's possession was the train set. My grandmother put them away until my dad was old enough to play with them without harming the trains or anyone else, including himself. When my grandma remarried again, my step-grandfather taught him how to use the trains when he was about 10 or 11 years old. And he has been using them for about 30 years ever since. And now he's passed them down to me.
Why did your grandmother keep the train?
It was one of the few special possessions that she had left, because when my grandfather left, he took a lot of special items belonging to both of them and the children. And that was one of the few things that he forgot or that he didn't want. And she thought that it would come in use someday.
What do you know about your biological grandfather?
I know that basically just his name, but my dad doesn't talk much about him, but he doesn't remember him much. He was only 3 when he abandoned my dad and his family. All I know is that his name was Herbert Alonzo Coombs II, and that he abandoned my dad's family.
What is your relationship with your step-grandfather like?
It's a very close relationship, and I don't even see him as my step-grandfather. Even though I know he is, I don't think of him that way. Whenever someone asks me who my grandfather is, my first thought is him, because he's a really fun-loving guy. He's really good at jokes, and he knows a lot of jokes, because he's heard a lot of different types of jokes, and he's really good at a whole bunch of things that I like. Like, he can swim very well. He's been swimming since the age of 4. He's been skiing since the age of 20. And I love to ski. He's the one who introduced me to it.
How did you get interested in toy trains?
My father and grandfather introduced this to me. I would go to my grandparents, my mother's side of the family's grandparents, I would go there just about every year, for before Christmas or after Christmas, and I would get to see the trains run around. And I always loved just sitting there watching it. And now that we have a train set, I'm very enthusiastic about building trains and the buildings and making tracks.
Are these trains special to you?
These trains are very special because not only are they very old, but they give me a memory of what my father must have went through without a real father. And I don't take having a father for granted. And it also gives me a connection to my biological grandfather.
Do you think you will keep on collecting trains?
Yes, I will. I'll keep on collecting trains, and I'll pass this set down without adding any more to it, but passing it down through generations and hope that one day it'll be just so special to other people.
See the old smoke rising round the bend. I reckon that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time of day, from the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. Here she goes. She's got a list of passengers that's mighty big, and they all want lists to Brown's Hotel, 'cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell, all the way from Philadelphia on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Trains are just one method of travel. Those fortunate enough to be immersed in another culture often experience very profound changes in how they view the world and how they view themselves. Nate Gottlieb Graham visited Africa, where he received a statue.
It's about 5.5 inches tall. It's mostly a bust. It has a rather large posterior. It has only a head. The head is flat in the front. It has a roughly shaped face, which has the nose, mouth, and eyes. It has little sockets for ears in the back, which don't protrude. And it's made of, I don't really know what kind of wood it's made out of, but it's light and it has a lot of knot holes all over it, and it has a flat base. My parents were going to Africa, they were in Africa to study a group of people called the Bang, because my mom was doing, she was writing a book about babies, because that's what she does, because she's an anthropologist. And my dad was kind of tagging along for the ride, because he's a writer, and he was just getting ideas. So when we first got there, we kind of had naming ceremonies. Well, my parents had already had them, because they were had been there before. And my dad had been named Tuesday, and my mom had been named Thursday. And so they named me Denju, who is the name of the men who founded the tribe, and people called me Nzri Denju. The Nzri is for, that means grandfather, so I was Grandfather Denju. Most of the adults thought that I was, well, they just saw me as the son of people that were doing work at their village. All the children saw me as, like, a fun new toy they could have loads of fun with. They, like, kind of carried me around everywhere, once literally, mostly every, whenever, wherever I went. About 20 or 30 kids would always follow. We had lots of fun. We built forts, we built dirt mounds, we built castles out of mud bricks. The kids would catch chickens, hit them on the head with rocks, and then roast them. I remember once I bought a big piece of rubber in exchange for some metal I found on the ground. And another man in the village, he made a slingshot for me, and I would slingshot the chickens in the fields when they tried to eat the crops. And this is kind of weird, but if the boys and girls were bored, what they would do is they would shout insults at each other. And Bang is a language very rich in insults. It has a bunch of really horrible insults, and I won't say them right now because it wouldn't be proper. But it's just, if you want to insult somebody, do it in Bang.
The Bang language may be rich in expression, but Nate says there were few of the everyday conveniences that we who live here take for granted.
There wasn't any... There was hardly any electricity in the village. The only electricity came from little hand crank generators, which were used to power the televisions, which were in little schools.
And there just wasn't a lot of stuff there. Sometimes people use battery-operated radios. Just, it wasn't modern, as we would call it. And around the beds, we always had to have mosquito netting because the mosquitoes were a really big problem, and they all had malaria, and malaria can make you really sick. And my dad had had malaria 5 times before that, and he could tell you how bad it was. They had water treatment, but it wasn't very advanced. And as it ended up, when we left, we bought them a new water treatment facility and a new grain thresher because we thought they just needed that stuff. When you leave, you're always expected to give a gift to somebody. And when we left, all the villagers were always kind of begging for gifts. Not really begging for gifts, they wanted gifts. You know, people would go up to my dad, they'd say, oh, can I have your typewriter? Can I have your food? Can I have your pens? Can I have your car? And of course, we couldn't give them that because we needed to get back. But what they did, they gave us gifts of some little piece of food, some little things that they made. One day, it was towards the end, we were about 3 1/4 months we spent there. A man named Kofi made it for me as a goodbye present after we left. One day I saw him carrying a long pole, 2 machetes, and a couple of carving knives, so kind of being very curious. I followed him, and he started carving at it. He stripped away the bark, then he stripped away some more stuff, then he kind of cut around it to make a little thing that looked like a head. Then he just kept carving until it began to take shape. It looked like a head with a body and a little base. And another thing he made me, on the last day, he made me a straw hat. And he put kind of a braided string under it that goes under my chin. It was really nice. It doesn't fit me anymore because I'm a bit bigger. The youngest one, one of the youngest ones was Meida. He was a good friend, but he was always being beaten by his mother because I think she had 7 children and he was one of the youngest ones, so she was kind of very angry with him. Before this, I hadn't really had any encounters with like racism and things like that, but once I got there, I mean, you couldn't really see it that much, but once we got into the city, everybody there was really suspicious of those in the villages, and they regarded us with even distrust for having come there. And I mean, my parents just kind of taught me about things, you know, racism, race relations, and how the Africans got to be how they were because of the terrible things the Europeans had done. It was kind of as much a learning experience as kind of like a thing saying, you know, like, don't you ever do that. And it was really profound, very profound experience.
I'm Tom McNilchis, and I'm discussing my piece of amber. Me and my sister found it in 1998. We were staying in Poland for about 2 months, the entire summer vacation, and we were visiting our friends Zosia and Wojtek up in Gdańsk. Me and my mom and my sister, we really like amber, and it's probably because a lot of our culture is Polish, because my mom grew up there and she really enforces Polish culture and stuff, and speaking Polish. She was the youngest in the family. She had an eldest sister, then she had a brother, and then another sister, and she lived in an apartment in Kraków. It's near, it's in not southern, but about midway Poland, and it's a pretty big city. So this was really the first year that we looked for amber, because our mom told us that we might find amber there. My sister really found it. There's no real systematic way besides to just stick your fingers and toes in the sand and crawl around, sifting through it for amber. And so I remember that day, the sun, we were out on a walk, and the sun was on the edge of the water, and it was nice, and the water was full of an orange glow, and my sister was running around. She was almost 7 at the time. So, you know, she was still kind of a little kid, and so she was all happy and stuff. And I really like visiting Poland because that's where my roots are and everything, and this amber gives me a way to do that.
You're listening to Memories Are Made of This, a collection of interviews about the power of objects to remind us about the past, as shown by the class of 2005 at University Laboratory High School. Sometimes memories can be painful. The death of a loved one is always a difficult memory, yet the departed remain a part of us. Their personalities help shape who we are, and the thought of their laughter and wisdom is something we can seldom forget.
Henry Pollock, and I am doing a hat and a pipe that are memorabilia of my grandfather.
Why are the hat and the pipe particularly special to you?
Well, they're special to me because they are the last things that I have to remember my grandfather, because a lot of his clothing and his personal belongings were sold after he died. So they're like some of the only things I have to remember of him, because he died when I was 3 years old.
Why does the cardboard strip on the hat say Dad?
I think it's because it was given to my grandfather from my mom as a Valentine's Day present, and he just let me wear it when I was a kid. That's the reason it says Dad was because it was a Valentine's Day present from my mom. And then the reason I ended up wearing it was because I like to imitate him. So when I was a kid, I wore that to imitate him, and it was just like laying around. So
where did the pipe come from? Is there a story behind it?
There's not a big story behind it. He just, the sad part about it is he smoked it when he was, he smoked it all through his life, and that was part of the reason that he died. He died from bladder cancer at the age of 65 years old. So, I mean, the pipe, we used to walk around and I used to mimic him, and that was just part of the thing I mimicked. He wore a hat and a pipe, so I used the same things that he did.
Why did the hat and the pipe make you feel important?
They made me feel important because when I was wearing them as a child, it made me feel like I was imitating my grandfather, and I felt that he was very important, and he was a main part in my life when I was a little kid. I thought he was so important because he was very old and dignified, and he taught me a lot of stuff about life, and he played with me, and he was very nice to me. So, I mean, I respected him.
What's your favorite memory about your grandfather?
My favorite memory about my grandfather is when I used to go over to his house, and he used to play with me, and we would play lots of games, and we would play with toys, and he would carry me around on his shoulders. And then we used to go out on walks to the park, and he'd carry me around and play games with me, and we'd have fun. He just taught me lessons about life, about what to do in certain situations, and he taught me a lot of things about math and science and history and a lot of different subjects in school.
What do you remember about his funeral?
I was happy at his funeral because I didn't know what was really going on, and I was a little kid. And so, I mean, all I remember about it is that there were a lot of relatives there, and that afterwards we went out and they stayed for a while, and then it was fun. I mean, I didn't really know, like, what a horrible thing had happened. I didn't know that he was dead. I didn't know what the concept of death was.
When did you first realize that your grandfather was dead?
I think I realized it probably about a year later. I realized that he was gone. I didn't know what had happened. I didn't know that he was going to be gone forever, but I figured out the concept of death, like, probably about a year later, and that's when I first realized that he wasn't ever going to come back.
I'm Hugh Monahan. My object is an old hand-painted statue of an angel with a small child clinging to his leg. The angel has long white wings and flowing brown hair. The angel also has a golden rope tied around his waist with gold edgings on the rope. There's also a small worried child. The bottom of the statue is green and the base is brown. It's a very nice statue. It's taken a lot of wear and tear because when I got it, used it more of a toy. But it's a nicely hand-painted, and it has several seams in it where a part was cracked or fell off, and we had to glue it back together. Upon receiving my first communion, a very good friend of our family's, and the parish priest, Father Bertaldo, gave the statue to me. I was walking out of church after my first communion, and he told me to wait. Like, after we got out, it's a tradition that whenever you walk out, you walk up and greet the priest after the end of Mass. And so, well, I walked up and said hi, and he told me to wait there, and then I just saw him walk off. I got anxious at that moment, because I thought I like maybe did something bad or something like that, but then he came back, and he had his arms behind his back, and then he just, you know, pulled out the angel. And it helps me to, like, not only does it help me to remember him, but also to, like, remember my faith in times of trouble or things like that. And also, it helps me a lot to to me it's like a source of stability. Father Bertaldo, he was a very, very funny man. He had a dark skin, he had brown hair, but he had been at our church for a long time, and he was very, very nice man, and he was very helpful to the community, and like he helped a lot when he could. So he was nice. He had a great sense of humor, and whenever we would invite him over to dinner, like my mom would cook some big Italian meal, and occasionally he would bring his accordion, and he could play the accordion quite well, and like he could do little dances or whatever. But he actually, one of the times that he came over, he showed me how to play the accordion. Not very good at it, but it's just one of those fun things, and he was very nice. But so he would come over every once in a while, like my mom would invite him. And we would always invite him over to like big dinners or celebrations that we would have. But he was just very nice, very funny. And he was very helpful and kind, so he was just a very nice person to have in the community. Because we have a large amount of Mexicans that are Catholic at Arcola, so like they would often attend Mass there with Father Bertaldo. So, but he was pretty much like he had some very good friends, and like any time they needed any help or anything like that, he would always just find out the problem and do what he could. He could help you on a lot of different levels. I mean, like at one time, like we saw him at least every Sunday. Like he would say the Mass, but then like after Mass, or on weekends or things like just during the weekday, when he would come, he would also just be like a very good friend. Just kind of like just one of those uncles that you see every once in a while. So it was just very nice, like you could talk to him. So he's just a very open and very nice man. So like he was very important to us because, I mean, not only to me, because he was just a funny guy, he was very nice, and it was great having him around at our house. I mean, we loved him. He's one of the few elderly gentlemen who actually paid more attention to us than our parents. Yeah, he was very important to our parents because not only was he an important part of our religion, but also any family matters between like my mom and dad and our family, he could help out with that, like any problems that we might have or anything like that. Like he was that one guy that they could talk to. He died not too long after he gave me the statue of disease, and I wasn't even there when it happened. I mean, he just collapsed during Mass, and a couple weeks later he was in the hot, like, after he collapsed, they sent him to the hospital. He never came back. I was just kind of devastated and a bit of, like, disbelief. this jolly Italian man who would, you know, come over to your house and, you know, play the accordion and things like that, he just seemed, you know, very energetic and healthy. And to me, it was just like, how could that happen? I really miss him, and I'm really beginning to realize just how much he meant to me.
Sometimes only a death can make us realize how important friendships are. Friends, as well as priceless memories, are often made through involvement in music, theater, or sports.
My name is Kinsey Cornell. My object is ticket stubs that I've collected over the years from shows that I've seen.
Within the ticket stubs, I've got many different kinds. They range in size and shape and color. They're made of paper. They don't have the plasticky feeling over them. And then I've also got some from theater that was not either not local theater or whatever, but like a theater from other places, such as Chicago, New York. I've seen quite a few shows on Broadway. One of the ones that brings back a lot of memories is Cats, which I saw with my mom. And it's a blue ticket, and it's kind of got the plasticky coating on it. One of the tickets is not torn on the perforation, the other is. And then I've got a ticket from a show that I saw with my dad, Annie, which is in the Assembly Hall, which is a theater in Urbana, Illinois. A lot of people, after seeing my collection, tell me that the tickets will be very valuable when I'm older. A lot of people would pay a lot of money for them, but I'm not interested in really in selling them or in the money aspect of them, because it's really just the memories that I keep them for. And so I think I'm just going to keep collecting tickets and learning more about theater and learning more about the actors and the costumes, and I think the ticket stubs are a good way to remember that. One ticket stub I have is for Cats, which I saw on Broadway, and I saw this with my mom. And my uncle, Kevin Markham, was Old Deuteronomy, the main cat, in Cats 15 years ago, I think. And this is on Broadway. And he passed away a couple of months before I was born, and so I never got to meet him. And so the show Cats is one way that I can kind of remember him.
I believe it is Old Deuteronomy.
When did you first get interested in theater?
Probably when I saw shows every couple of months or years when I was little. And I just loved going to a show and pretending I was in the character's shoes, and I was there, and I was like, if it was the show The Secret Garden, all of a sudden I was in The Secret Garden, and I was looking for different plants that I'd never seen before. Or if I saw Oliver, I was there, one of the orphans, and I was hungry, and I was holding out my soup bowl wanting more soup. So I definitely think I've been influenced from theater all of my life. I love acting because my parents acted. I went to many of their performances when I was very, very little. They've helped me learn lines for different shows I've been in and songs, and they've helped me learn monologues, which are basically speeches that only one person says by themselves, and it's often used in auditions. And you give your monologue, and then you sing a song, and you read some lines from the play or musical that you're trying out for, and then you get notified whether or not you got in. So they've helped me learn monologues, they've helped me learn songs.
Do you plan to pursue an acting career like your parents, or do you just want to keep it a hobby?
Yeah, I think I want to pursue a career in acting among everything else that I'm wanting to do. I'm wanting to become a teacher. I'm wanting to become, someone who lives in France for a while. I want to do math, but most of all, I want to do theater. And as for theater, I want, even though it's not paid extremely well, you don't really need money to do something you love. And that's why I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, who really needs a lot of money if you love doing it, Teachers, sometimes they teach not for the money, but just because they love being around kids, they love teaching. That's the same thing for actors, because you really don't get a lot of money, and yet you still just love the experience.
Sarah Leroy, and I'm going to talk about my ring. It's a metal gold-plated ring, and the band is thin, and it's kind of oval shaped because I used to wear it so much it's kind of warped.
Got this ring from being in the show Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. How did you get interested in being in this show?
Well, I had been in 5 shows, and I thought that it would be really fun to be in a show with my friends, and I really liked the show.
What was the audition like? I mean, were you worried about your chances of getting in?
I was really nervous. First, I went and sang in front of the director and the producer, and I was really upset with myself after I finished because I thought I didn't do a good job. And then, well, before I sang, I had to wait a really long time because there were a lot of people trying out. And then I had to wait some more for the dance part. I was in a group with some other ladies, and they told the choreographer that they didn't even want to try out for the part because they couldn't dance. And so it was just me and my dance teacher, and she taught me the dance and then watched me do the dance. And I thought I did a pretty good job until I saw people in their mid-20s who had much more experience than me. I was very, very nervous, and I seriously doubted that I was going to get in.
But you did.
But I did.
So you were pretty excited.
I was very excited. When we went to go see the cast list posted, and I saw there were 11 wives, and they had them divided into orange team and blue team. And the blue team was more experienced, and they were in one more number than us, than the orange team, but I was still very excited to be a dancer in the show.
Lifts? Is this something you did on stage?
Yeah. It was mainly during the hoedown scene, and it comes after the brothers get rid of Joseph. And the song is, there's a slow song first called There's One More Angel in Heaven, where one of the brothers is telling the father about how Joseph died this heroic death, and really they just sent him off to Egypt or something. And then after the father leaves, then there's this hoedown scene in celebration of Joseph being gone because they don't like Joseph. And that was my favorite scene because it was just upbeat. And the lifts, there were a lot of different ones, and I was really scared about doing the lifts because the first night we practiced them, you know, I hardly even knew this guy, and he was way older than me, and I was just really scared because just to be like, it pretty much felt like being like thrown up in the air. And it was scary at first, and then it was really fun. It was the biggest part I've ever had in a show, and it was the most fun part because I love dancing, and I love the people that I met in the show, and it was just a really awesome experience.
This ring, you mentioned that other girls received them as well, other wives. Was it something all the husbands did together?
Actually, the husbands didn't give them to us. One of the producers gave them to us. And it was just kind of an inside joke. And everyone pretended that they were from the husbands, but they really weren't. But that didn't really bother us because it was cool to have a memory of the show like this. Normally, people give like flowers or something, but those don't really last. And this will happen for a really long time.
Sometimes, lifelong friendships begin in surprising ways.
My name is Ellie Goldwasser, and my object is a plush Care Bear. When I was in kindergarten for my birthday one year, my sister got me this Care Bear, and I was so excited. The bear is about a foot high. It's a light pink plush color, and he has got a satin stomach with a rainbow on it, and colorful designs like hearts and stars, which represents this Care Bear, who is Cheer Bear. He's got a light pink nose and purple eyes. And I wanted to bring it to preschool really bad, And so my mom finally let me bring it, but she was like, I don't know, Ellie. You'd be really upset if it got dirty. I was like, I'll be careful. So I brought it with me, and I was showing it to my best friend, Stephanie. And she's like, oh my gosh, I have one too. We should play with them sometime. So then we started playing a lot more frequently together, and we'd talk about them. We'd watch the movies. Even in fifth grade, we'd watch the Care Bear movies with our Cheebears together, and we'd have a lot of fun. But we went on a lot of adventures, Stephanie and I, and it was so much fun because we'd always dress up in things because that was just our favorite thing to do. And we put on these sequiny things that are supposed to be like a tube top, and we put them on as little skirts because we were kind of little then. And they fit, and we were like, yeah, I'm a rock star. And we'd make up little songs, like when we were superheroes. We'd have little songs to dumb little tunes, and they were really funny. We'd have tea parties, and we'd put on really pretty, like, evening gowns. And we'd have tea and what we would call crumpets, which were actually just regular cookies or something. And we'd sit there and try to act all prim and proper. And we'd be like, this tea is simply marvelous. It was so funny. And we'd just do a lot of fun stuff together. And as we got older, we'd just gossip together because we went to different schools. So we'd get the scoop on everybody.
How did you feel when you found out Stephanie was leaving?
Well, when I found out, we were on a walk because her dad had told my mom that morning. And my mom wanted Stephanie to tell me. So my mom said, why don't you call Stephanie and see if you guys go on a walk? Because we did that a lot. And so we started wandering, and Stephanie says, Ellie, I just want to let you know I'm moving to South Carolina. And I didn't believe her for the longest time, because one time before she had done that, and she was joking. And so I really didn't believe her. And then after a while, I finally did. And I was just shocked, and we kept saying, well, we'll write to each other. We'll send each other presents every month. We'll keep on email, because at that time I wasn't really into that email thing. So she helped me kind of figure out more things with it that, like, before she left. And we were like, we'll try to stay in touch as much as we can. We'll call on weekends and we'll write every day, and we won't forget each other. And it was just kind of a shock, because I'd never imagined. We'd always, like, imagine going to high school together, and just, I don't know, she'd been my best friend since I was in preschool, and I really didn't have anybody else that was that close. And so it was just kind of, I didn't know what it was gonna be like until she actually had left. And I was like, oh my gosh, I only have about 6 months until you move. And so that was, I don't know, it was just kind of hard. And we just do as many things together as we could. And we try to get together, and we would just try to say, well, we're gonna do all this stuff together. And we kind of try to come up with things that we would do. And like when she moved, we would try to do a lot of different things. The last day was kind of, well, I remember I had gotten her a frame, and it was like, it said best friends and all these other little things about best friends on it. And I put a picture of us in it because we pretended like we were superheroes. She was Wonder Woman, I was Tropical Woman. We had songs, like theme songs, and we would run around. And we have pictures of us, and I stuck one of those pictures in the frame. And so I wanted to bring it to her the day she moved. I was going to someone's house that afternoon, and I was pretty anxious about that because it was somebody that I really wanted to go to their house, and she's like telling me what to do because we were going to hang out and all. I wasn't sure when she was leaving that day, so I was kind of nervous, like, oh my gosh, I hope I don't miss her. I ran over to her house, and there was like nothing in there. It was so weird because I had helped them pack up some stuff, but I hadn't seen it without anything in it, and it is so weird. And I walked in, and Stephanie and her sister Jessica, who was like 3 years older than her, were sitting there and talking, and then I gave her the thing, and we just hugged, and I couldn't stay very long, and I felt really bad. but so I kind of had to leave. At least we didn't have to sit there and like drag on the goodbyes, because I think that would be even harder than just to pass goodbye. And I don't know, so I gave her the thing and she was really excited. And we just kind of said goodbye and I left. And then I remember that night I was like pretty upset about it, because I didn't want her to move. But as soon as she got there, she called me, as soon as her phone was hooked up, because that's what we promised. And it was nice to hear from her. She's like, my house is so cool. And I remember about the superheroes, when she came back one year in the winter, it was freezing, and we put on our outfits, which was a swimsuit for her, and mine was a leotard, and then we had capes that were towels, and that's all. And we were running around outside singing our songs, and the neighbors were looking at us like we were crazy. We were like, too bad, but it was a lot of fun. Sometimes on the weekends we call each other, but not very often, and we email each other a whole lot. And sometimes we get together, like about once every year or year and a half. I saw her this summer at my bat mitzvah, and it was really fun. And it's like so exciting to see her now, but then I don't like to watch her leave. But we talk to each other a lot on email, and we also write each other letters on Sanrio stationery, because I had gotten some when she was here, and she near her house in South Carolina, there's a Sanrio store, so she gets me all this cool Sanrio stuff every year for Hanukkah and for my birthday, because I can't really get good Sanrio stuff here. So she sends me stationery, and we always write each other really funny letters, and we put a whole bunch of stickers and stuff in it. It's really hard to keep in touch, and I haven't talked to her in a long time. But normally she lets me know when she comes to town, so I get to see Stephanie when she comes, and that's a lot of fun. But it's really hard to keep in touch.
Although you have heard only 10 interviews, the ideas and themes expressed in the past hour are representative of last year's sub-freshman class at Uni High in Urbana. This project is indebted to all the sub-freshmen who shared their very personal memories. The student's history teacher was Barbara Wysocki. Dave Dickey provided technical support. Thanks to Kinsey Cornell for production assistance. The interviewers involved with this program were Max Bashirs, Brad Gurney, Nick Guler, Atul Kale, Sarah Leroy, Allison Liss, Hugh Monahan, Andy Renner, Abe Robinson, and Ben Sands. The producers are Emily Bruce and Kate Peisker. My name is Betsy Dorner.